fact, you know, that all the two highest civil awards in Pakistan, Jalal Gadi Azam, Jalal Pakistan, for my work on the restoration of democracy in Pakistan in the 1980s, and my work on Kashmir over 25 years. So I am all too familiar with the problems in Pakistan. Of course, I stand ready to do whatever I can, but I do have a lot of other things that I'm doing, and it's not possible to be in two places at one time, obviously. But if we can arrange such a thing, I would be prepared to do it. All I have time to say about the what they call AFPAC, rather insultingly, the conflation of Afghanistan and Pakistan, who in the jargon of the militarists have become one question, and that at least has the benefit of being true. All I have time to say about that at this time is that they are sowing a terrible wind, and they will reap a terrible whirlwind when this whole affair is over, because as we in the anti-war movement in Canada and in Britain argued right from the beginning, that the invasion by hundreds of thousands of foreign soldiers of Muslim land like Afghanistan, which has never been successfully occupied by anyone, we've collected so much money across the past. That Afghanistan has never been successfully occupied by anybody, even Alexander the Great failed to. George Bush definitely, no, Alexander the Great. So we argue that not only is this war wrong, it's doomed to failure. And it is doomed to failure, and Canada should recognize that it's sending brave young Canadian soldiers to their deaths for no reason. This war will end on terms which could have been obtained without a war, without a single person's life being lost. On the question of the calumnifying, the criminalizing of Palestine working in Canada as being somehow anti-Semitic or terroristic, then we have to stand up and face this. We can't be terrorized out of this debate. And this victory, in this case, will profoundly assist us. You ask my advice, sister, it would be to hire Barbara Jackman as your lawyer. That's the best advice I can give you, because in the light of this judgment, standing up for Palestinian rights is not a crime in Canada. That much we now know is the law in Canada. It's a moot point whose apartheid was worse. It doesn't really matter. The South African blacks did have checkpoints. They had passes, which they had to present whenever an apartheid racist policeman demanded it. They could live in one place, but not another. They could marry only amongst their own racial group and not another. They could have one job, but not another. And they lived in desperate poverty, whilst the colonial European settlers lived a high life. The one thing of which I'm certain is that apartheid in South Africa was doomed and was defeated between the hammer of the actions of the African National Congress in the country and the international movement acting as an anvil around the world. And between that hammer and that anvil, apartheid was broken, and we have to recreate that anvil on the Palestine question. convoy, Southwest of the convoy, the sailing to Gaza, and I'm sure you can watch this. On the map of what we're calling the long tour, from coast to coast to coast, and now we're real in depth over this question of Afghanistan. It's really quite simple in essence. We have legitimate rights vis-a-vis Afghanistan. We have the legitimate right to insist that Afghanistan does not become a base for the kind of Al-Qaeda terrorism with which we are familiar. This is a legitimate demand from us. Nobody should make the mistake of imagining that because we oppose what our governments do, that means that we support what Al-Qaeda or anyone else of their ilk does. I was a member of Parliament in the East End of London on the 7th of July 2005 when my own constituents were being carried, bleeding and dead from the London Underground as a result of an act of mass murder carried out by people influenced by the worldview of Bin Laden and his kind. I mean it when I say we hate terrorism. We just don't distinguish between the terrorism of these mass murderers and the terrorism of the even bigger mass murderers who run our countries. In Afghanistan. And not only is it possible to negotiate such an agreement now, it was actually possible to negotiate such an agreement before a single person had been killed. The Taliban government offered the United States Osama bin Laden if they produced evidence that he was involved in the mass murder on 9/11. This should have been taken up. It was perfectly possible to reach an agreement that would mean that Afghanistan could not be used by these nihilistic, medieval obscurantists to spread cascade death and destruction around the world. And that's exactly how the war will end. We will negotiate with a national unity government in Afghanistan, precisely that. And then we'll say, all those people who died from 2001 until whenever we do make that deal need not have died. But the overarching point is this, that far from curbing, suppressing, minimizing the spread of Islamist extremism, these wars are multiplying Islamist extremism. Every time a drone attack kills a family in Pakistan, thousands of more people in Pakistan become fanaticized, extremized. It's obvious, you don't need to be Einstein to work it out. Every time an atrocity takes place in Afghanistan, this Taliban, so-called, becomes more powerful, but less. This should be obvious to anyone with eyes to see, with the brain to study, not just this conflict, but other conflicts. But who are the Taliban? Who invented the Taliban? Who invented Al-Qaeda? Britain and the United States.
in the British Parliament the night before Capwell fell to these obscurantists, now nearly 20 years ago, I said to Mrs. Thatcher, you have opened the gates for the barbarians, and a long dark night will now descend upon the people of Afghanistan. And I never said a truer word. That's exactly what happened. Somebody mentioned the liberation of women. There was a government in Afghanistan that liberated women, that built schools for girls, universities for women, that began to nationalize the land of the big landowners and distributor amongst the peasants, that was driving for literacy and basic primary health in Afghanistan. That was the very government in Afghanistan that Ronald Reagan and Margaret Thatcher armed the Taliban and Al-Qaeda to destroy. So, I will say, don't try and hang Al-Qaeda around my neck. I hate Osama bin Laden, the difference is, I always hated them. I hated them when they were giving him guns and money and the means to power that he had in Afghanistan in the first place. So, in short, because I really must go, and I'm really grateful for this magnificent meeting this afternoon, this evening, in this wonderful city of Toronto. You see, if you criminalize, suppress and marginalize points of view like mine and yours, not only is that an affront to democracy itself, it means that the foreign policy outcome in the state will be flawed, because only one side of the argument will have been heard in order to establish the prevailing orthodoxy. If freedom means anything, it must mean the freedom of thoughts to contend, of arguments to be heard and weighed up by the people in a democratic country. And the big crime of Kenny and this government has been to seek to silence, to terrorize, to drive out legitimate arguments that must be heard. And that's the reason why Canada's foreign policy has so isolated it in the world, why it must be changed in the interests not just of you, but in the interests of the wider world. That's why I intend to spend as much time as I can here in Canada in the next month and years to come. Thank you. Thank you.